Welcome to the NetFit podcast. I'm Kim Green, and today we'll be spending some time with the GOAT of netball, Laura Langman. The most decorated player in netball history with 163 international caps for the Silver Ferns, two Commonwealth Games gold medals, plenty of domestic premierships to her name, and most recently, a world champion. I think we can honestly say we are in the company of the greatest of all time. Today we're powered by the Athlete's Foot. Get fitted for your position and own the netball court this season with the fitting experts. She's shaking her head at me. Lawsy Langman, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I know you're a little bit embarrassed. Now, yeah. You're the most humble goat I've ever met in my life.
That's because it's not true. You could be done for fraud.
NetFit podcast fraud.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending your afternoon with us. We are so super pumped. You are such an idol of all of our NetFitters. I know they really look up to you. You inspire, you motivate, and in this netball community, you're one of the best people that I've ever met. So I'm so pumped to have you on board.
Thanks.
You're so welcome.
I'm lucky to be involved, I always feel.
No. You keep shaking your head at me. So I just want to talk a little bit about your netballing career. I want to talk about some of your career highlights because it would be silly not to. And then lastly, talk about a little bit about your leadership style and what you've learned along the way. So getting started, what was a moment that you were like, I want to go and play netball? What age were you? Where were you? Who was it with?
Yeah, it all happened really fast for me, actually. So I grew up in a really small rural country town, Te Pahu, in Waikato. And at that time, there were only a few sports going at school, so you pretty much played anything and everything. Otherwise, the school didn't have a team. So I probably picked up netball there, but it wasn't until I probably got to high school where the sports coordinator pulled me aside and was like, this is your goal, this is what you got to do. And at that time I was just like, you're just the nod and smile type. So I just ran with it and then just started getting asked along to trials and to be extras at trainings. And yeah, it all kind of happened. I can't honestly say I ever remember watching the Ferns being like, I want to be a Silver Fern. I think I don't know, at the time it probably felt like a bit of a lofty goal, and I just kind of enjoyed playing anything and everything. And it wasn't probably until after my very first 15 minutes of fame, they say that's when I knew I wanted to be in the black dress for a very long time. So yeah, it probably took me right to the nth hour to be like, yep, this is me.
Which is so interesting because a lot of netballers now that are coming through, the younger ones that are coming through now, have seen it all over TV.
Yeah.
And I think for, I don't want to say our generation, but we are a little bit older, Lawsy.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
And it wasn't so prevalent on TV, especially in Australia. We didn't have a whole lot. I was exactly the same. I never didn't even know who was playing in the Swifts when I rocked up. I knew Liz Ellis and I knew Kath Cox.
Yeah, right.
Because they were on posters and things like that. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I honestly remember going to New Zealand games and like running down the stairs trying to get a Dean Wilson's signature. And then maybe probably years later, I got to be captained by her in the Fern. So that was, yeah, it's funny to think how things turn out.
So touching on, you know, you found that little bit of I actually want that. And when was that? Was it when you first started playing for the Magic?
Magic kind of was a bit of a whirlwind as well. It was back in the days when in New Zealand you had trials for super teams, essentially. It was the equivalent. And Noel's invited Casey and myself to go along to trials. It was like a weekend event at Taumuru Event Centre, another small rural community. And then the team got rid out. Like it was nothing like you sign contracts, you don't have to do anything to get in the team, you had to trial, and Case and I got drafted.
Oh my God.
And yeah, it was a pretty big shock. I honestly was the most like homesick, homebody person. And I'm pretty sure I remember Mum being worried about how I was going to cope with I've been away in the weekend.
You were that kid.
I was their kid. I was their kid. And now I'm the kid that never goes home. So I don't know who won out of that. But yeah, I think, that was when, like, I to this day am so fortunate and very grateful for the era that I was drafted into. Pretty much as soon as I made that team, Jolene Henry took me under her wing and she really taught me kind of what training was all about. I would go, and I'm not kidding you, for a 20-minute run probably every day and thought that was enough. And boy, was I wrong.
Well, I mean,
20 minutes quality.
I mean, Laws, you now run marathons for fun.
Yeah, well, not marathons, but I run longer than 20 minutes. it was probably in magic. Just learning. It was a really quite a professional environment now when I look back for its time.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky with the people that have surrounded me my entire career. So that would be one tip. Find good people and hang on.
Yeah, it is very, really important, especially when you're so young.
Yeah, and it's knowing good people too. Yeah. And you know, you learn a few things along the way, that's for sure. But when you find those gems, they're special people, and definitely keep them tight.
And what age group, for everyone listening at home, what age were you when you were picked up into Magic?
I think I might have been 16 picked up. Maybe going on 17. I was turning 17 in that year, so that was pretty. And I think, actually, to be honest, I sat the bench for the large majority of the year, and then an injury happened, and I went on at Wing D. And that's really where my passion for Wing D kind of came from. And what I really liked about that position was the fact that you kind of get thrown in there, but I just had to worry about myself.
Yeah.
The players that I had around me, I was just so lucky. I just had to go on there and worry about my own job. So that's where Wing D originated from. And then I remember the first season I had to play centre. At the end of the season, I remember saying to Mum, "Holy, I lasted a whole season at centre." Because my 20-minute runs were something of the past. But it's really funny how once you get a taste, you shift the goalpost and you shift the expectation of yourself. And I think that's one of the most wonderful thing about sport, is you learn a whole lot about yourself too. But your belief in yourself and knowing what you've got just continues to grow, and you just keep changing those goalposts, which is so cool.
Okay, I want to come back to that a little bit later. We call it leveling up at NetFit. That's how we talk to it. And I'm going to come back a little bit later on that one. But I want to talk to you about your career and the incredible highlights that you have. You know, you've been to World Cups, you've been to Commonwealth Games, won premierships. Just incredible. What has been the career highlight for you, if you could pick one?
If I could pick one, it would probably be the World Cup in Liverpool this year. Probably for the journey. I was really fortunate. In 2012, I met this phenomenal sports psych, David Galbraith, who really kind of shaped what my philosophy is towards life, without getting too deep.
Yep.
Because before that, I was the typical netballer. What are you doing next year? I'll play netball. I didn't really have any, not set direction, but I didn't really have any philosophies that I lived by. David really influenced me in terms of establishing what are my values, why do I make the decisions that I do. And I think that kind of all came to fruition this year around the whole journey getting to World Cup.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one, which from the outside, you're a freak. And you are. I know you don't think you are, but you are. You're a freak. And the fact that you're still trying to better yourself and surround yourself with new and more stimulating things, each just try and get yourself better. Like that is so inspirational, because, you know, you could easily just sit on what you've got. and continue doing what you're doing, but you haven't. That's very cool. You don't have to say anything to that. Okay. You can sit there awkwardly like you are. So I did want to talk about the lead up to the World Cup. It was a little bit disruptive, obviously, hugely. Heading into World Cup. We're in the middle of a domestic season. And you've been named as the captain heading over there. How was that? And what, I guess, steps did you put in place to make sure that when you actually hit Liverpool, you had a team that was ready to go?
Great question. And so multi-leveled. In terms of, I'll talk firstly on a personal front and then I'll move to the team front. So for me, on a personal level, World Cup wasn't even on my radar 365 days before that. I honestly was done and dusted. I was quite happy being up to pasture, doing all sorts. And then when the banter went on and I'd committed, there was a huge amount of, can I actually do this? Let alone putting leadership responsibilities on top of that. Mm-hmm. So it was a really good learning for me because I had to be okay with what I could bring to the team.
Yep.
Because I wasn't going to be the player I was, and I had to be realistic about how I was going to contribute and potentially how long I was going to be able to contribute for. So at this point in time, the World Cup team hadn't been named and I was going back from playing club netball to international netball like within a couple of months. And that, my hubby said, was risque. And it was. I didn't know if my calves were going to hold up. Like, it was daunting, but there was a thrill in it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a real good test of what did I have, and it was a real good test of, I always pride myself in this philosophy of not looking over my shoulder, and this was going to be the biggest test of all time because the New Zealand middies were in fine form.
Yeah, mid-quarters.
Yep,
so the Aussies
good
listening.
Good, translate. So in terms of my personal performance and numbers against them, I was like bottom/middle of the pack, which was a position that I prided myself on being the best or trying, you know, leading by, that's how I thought I led by example, and I wasn't able to do that anymore. So that was that bit. Then getting named captain, I think I was really lucky in terms of the leadership that Knowles and Deb brought themselves. I think our role as a leadership group or the fossils was just to bring it to life or relay the messages, because all three of us were going on individual journeys ourselves in terms of getting to where we needed to be. So that wasn't hard. You just had to trust in the process, which wasn't hard for me with Knowles because hand on heart, I'd go to war with her. And I think what's fantastic of people just starting out now playing is you will find that one coach that you will move heaven and earth for, and it's just really special. But team-wise, obviously we were going into a unknown environment in terms of where individuals were at, where the team was at post-com games. I don't think it would be sugarcoating it to say it was quite traumatic for the New Zealand contingent. Knowles led the way essentially. Obviously, to be able to go forward, sometimes you've got to go back. So we went back and reflected on what was the monstrosity of 20 of the com games. And it was really interesting stuff that came out. And it's really funny how, without kind of drawing it out, but we brought in this guy, apologies, I've forgotten his name at this moment in time, and he really worked on the culture in the Ferns in terms of what were we willing to accept, what were we expecting of each other. But what I really loved was we didn't just do it with the squad, with the potential, so to speak. It was with the entire squad.
Yep.
And I think that was a real point of difference for us going into this World Cup versus others. And all the tournaments leading up, we were trying to expose as many people to international netball as we could.
And you could really see that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was exciting. And, like, we didn't get the results. We were still bringing the L's home. But we were playing the long game essentially. And so we worked tirelessly, like I'm talking 3-hour meetings, with the whole squad. And I think that was really crucial in terms of for a lot of players being able to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And just to, obviously I've got the visual in my head, but you don't, but imagine you're in a massive conference room and there's these three chairs in the middle of it. And two chairs. You had to go stand behind one and say something that you're holding on to, and then how you're going to throw it away and what you're going to do going forward.
Confronting.
It was really confronting. I'm talking there's like 24 people in the room.
Wow.
Yeah. And at that point in time, and this I think is an example of knowing what you've got. I remember thinking, oh, I've got nothing. I feel like there's nothing I need to let go of, but I felt like in that moment I had to find something. So I found something. But this was the moment that I was like, oh, we've got a point of difference here. Noel's got up and stood behind the first chair and goes, I've got nothing to let go of. I'm here and I'm ready. And then, the second chair was, you had to say what you're scared of or like fearful of. And she was like, nothing. She says, oh, I know I'm not going to muck up.
Wow.
Now, for the squad to hear that was amazing. Was amazing.
Well, you straight away.
Straight away. And I think straight away, all 24 were putting their hands up for the final 12. And the level of commitment in terms of the final 12 that we're going to get the nod, like you knew they were going to earn it and deserve it.
I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, so that was a moment for me. And then when we I just think it was a slow burn for us, I think, in terms of bringing the intensity back to trainings, being able to be honest with each other.
Yeah.
It was all stuff that I feel like when I look at the Diamonds, it's probably stuff that's been in there for years, but we had to reestablish that. I think how the Fossils kind of helped Noel's bring leadership to life was the fact that we had way more, we expected everybody to lead. I wasn't making all the decisions. If someone wanted to change the program, I would be like, you go talk to Noel's. because I felt like if they were really passionate about it, they would go and have a conversation, no worries, with Deb and Noel's. I think the ownership really picked up as well through the three of us doing that.
Yep.
We had to be honest, we didn't even know.
Did you know, did you have an inkling
that
you're going to nail it?
No, none whatsoever. And I love it because you pass people in the street, they're like, we knew you were going to do it. And I was like, how? Because we definitely did not.
Was there a time throughout the tournament that you were like, we're going to compete here?
No.
Was it the Aussie game?
No, is the thing. So... I thought our strategy, Noel's and Deb's strategy in terms of what they were trying to do in the prelims, it was very smart.
Yeah.
So back in previous campaigns, you often go on play a half, right?
Yeah.
And then you'd come off and put your feet up. But Noel's was all about like 50 minutes, get on, get off, next people on, get on, get off, you're back on, get on, get off.
Yeah.
And that I felt really, one, the engagement was still there. No one clocked off when they'd done their shift. And B, that responsibility of getting themselves warm and game ready for any potential.
And it's investment, right?
Yes, 100%. And because when you come into an elite side like the Ferns or the Diamonds, I would say 12 people are used to being starters. I don't think that's a big leap to say that. And then all of a sudden your role sometimes changes and you're coming off the bench. So you've got to learn how to warm up for that.
Yeah.
And so everybody had to do that, which is not something we've ever had to investigate in the past. And so I thought we played that quite smart. I say we, not
I'm owning it too.
Played that quite smart too. And I think too, the physicality of the teams that we don't get exposure to year in, year out, didn't take its toll as much because you were on there for 15 minutes and then you could You think about a way to better deal with it.
Yeah.
So, you ask about that midweek Aussie game. I think it's a stretch. I never had the inkling, but I think the England game for me was the biggest coup.
Yeah.
Shivers. I think
that was an incredible game.
And then it pretty much came down to our ability to back up. Well, could we do it?
And, you know, it's so interesting because for all of our listeners, when you go into a World Cup or a Commonwealth Games, any sort of big milestone sort of tournament, you don't only have the pressure of yourself, you have the pressure of your country, you have the pressure of the media, have mm-hmm. pressure of social media, all saying different things. And I remember them saying they played the grand final before the grand final.
100%.
And that was the slogan that was sort of plastered everywhere.
Yep.
When you've been in plenty of World Cups and you finally get that gold medal in your hand, tell me what that was like. The feeling of winning. It's just iconic. The vision of you in particular when you won. And I was just like elated for you at 3 a.m. Sydney time. But tell us what that was like, because it only comes around, obviously, every however long, 16 years.
Yeah, and a bit of a story. My birthday's on the 16th, and it's been 16 years both times since New Zealand has won it. So I'll leave you with that. But anyway, that's a tangent. What was the moment like? Well, I was prepared to pay the penalty. And then these two shooters are running at me, and I'm thinking, get back in there. Far out. I have no words, to be honest, what the moment was like. I obviously had never known. You don't sometimes know how much those moments mean to you until they happen.
Yeah.
So I'd always, making a World Cup final was massive, was always cool, but I was often involved in teams that were second, silver. But yeah, there's no words when you win a World Champs. Like, I used to say Commonwealth Games is the best out of the two pinnacle years, but winning a World Cup. Yeah, winning a World Cup's just something different.
Yeah.
I even felt like the campaigns feel bigger.
Yeah.
Even though it's the same length of time. If I'm honest, I just felt like I was really elated for people like Knowles, Casey, Maria, who had done the long, hard burn, had ups and downs, left and right. And I was like, yes, we can reward them for their commitment. Mm. And just honestly, it's not so much getting the medal. It is honestly the journey. And I know that sounds cheesy as, but it is. Like seeing the growth in players like Amelia Rand.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, she's incredible.
Holy moly, eh?
She was incredible. And just continues to blow people's minds.
And people who learn a new position, like Pole, and 12 months later, she's like the leading wing D. Like, so I just think, that one's special.
Yeah.
My vocab doesn't expand that far for a word.
I love that so much. Very special. Yeah. So for our Netfitters at home, we often get asked about leadership when they're working into a new leadership position or, they're having to step up into a different role where there is a tiny bit of more leadership upon them. What's a piece of advice that you would give them so that they can be successful in what they're doing and not, I guess, it take over everything like you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes time. You're not going to be the leader that you think you want to be and the leader that you end up being is two very different people.
Yeah, correct.
So give yourself time would be my biggest. And put yourself in situations where you have to learn as well. I think sometimes when you've been in teams a very long time, you forget what it's like to be a rookie.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best decisions I made was, and probably one of the most influential times of my career in terms of leadership, was when I came to the Swifts. Being under you, then having experience under Jeeva, I think definitely had the biggest impact on the leader that I was for the Ferns. So time's a big thing. And two, don't be scared to not have all the answers.
Yeah.
And ask people what they want. If you're in a management meeting, sometimes you get caught up feeling like you have to have the answers. You don't.
Yeah, you can always come back.
Yeah.
I think...
And that was something I learned from you. You're fantastic at it.
Well, I think the one thing that, like, is a constant when I talk about leadership or ask questions about leadership to all sorts of leaders within different industries is that it's okay to stuff up. At the time, you may feel like it may be the worst thing that's ever happened, but it's okay because you learn from it. If you don't learn from it, there's an issue.
Yes.
You're not a leader.
Yeah.
But if you're learning from it and you're growing from it, it's a really great place to be.
Yeah.
And we talk about in it fit often that you never want to be the smartest person or the loudest person in the room.
Yeah.
Because you're always taking in, you always want to be listening and you always want to hear what other people are saying, but you also want to be learning. Which leads me perfectly into the next little part. I know you spoke about what we call is as leveling up. So what's next for Laura Langman? What's the next level up for Laura Langman? Because you have done it all.
No, it doesn't feel like that. What's next? That's a great question. I think 2018 when I took my first sabbatical.
Your first bit of time off.
Look, just to segue a little bit, I was a player prior to that year who I wanted to be in everything. I wanted to make sure I was available for everything because I thought if I wasn't, I'd get forgotten about.
Yep.
That is a myth.
Yep.
I think the break was the best thing that could have happened to me because it gave me perspective. And two, it gave my body the chance to actually like recoup from a season. Yep. And I got rid of the little things that you end up just – they become the new norm, but it's not. So don't be afraid. You know, I think there's so much netball out there and there's so many opportunities, but it is okay to be like, actually, I'm going to sit this one out because your body will rebound and you'll come back bigger, better, stronger. What's next for me? I actually have my eyes on a non-netball event.
Okay. Is it a marathon?
No, it's not. it's the Harvey Bay 100.
Right.
So that I like to pick things that make me nervous and make me a little bit scared as in, oh, I don't know if you can do that, Law. So I've got that lined up in November next year. I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that'll do for now.
Yeah. Well, we can get you back on and you can keep us updated on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Last question for you. What ASICS netball shoe do you wear? Give us insight. We want to know what the GOAT wears.
Oh, gosh. I don't go past the Netbooner professionals.
Yeah.
They never steered me wrong in all my 3,000 years of netball.
It's a great choice. Very good choice. Well, thank you so much, Lawsy, for coming in. Like I've said so many times, you were just an incredible player, but more importantly, an incredible person. Today, we're powered by The Athlete's Foot. Get fitted for your position and own the netball court this season with The Fitting Experts.